Ein kurzer Hinweis vorweg. Diese Folge ist in Englisch. Im Krisenmodus wird nun häufiger zweisprachig erscheinen.
The Mandalay region in Myanmar was struck by a powerful earthquake at the end of March. A 7.7 magnitude earthquake hit the country, severely affecting Mandalay, Myanmar's second largest city. The situation on the ground is dire. More than 1,600 people have already lost their lives, and countless others remain trapped under the rubble. Desperate rescuers are trying to save survivors with their bare hands and shovels, while battling temperatures of over 40 degrees Celsius. But this earthquake is not just a natural disaster. It has hit a country already in a state of emergency. Myanmar has been engulfed in a brutal civil war since the military coup in 2021. And while people search for life beneath the ruins, the military continues its attacks relentlessly. Instead of helping, the junta is bombing regions and seemingly using the crisis for its own purposes. The humanitarian situation is catastrophic. International aid is urgently needed, but the government is blocking relief organizations, preventing heavy rescue equipment and medical supplies from reaching the affected areas. The people on the ground are left to fend for themselves. To better understand the situation, we are speaking with David Eubank from the Free Burma Rangers. He is currently in Myanmar and will report on the shocking conditions, the challenges of humanitarian aid, and the political situation that is making this disaster even worse.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
David is a real interesting guy. He's running the Free Burma Rangers since more than 30 years, and he's a former army officer, a ranger. That's where the name comes from, Free Burma Rangers. So, Free Burma Rangers, they are a humanitarian organization, not only working in Myanmar, but also working in countries like Iraq or Syria. And first I heard of this organization in 2014, 15, and 16, when the so-called Islamic State was fighting in Iraq and Syria, and David and his people, they rescued a lot of wounded people from the front lines, and they are quite interesting. They are tough. They are really working in areas that's absolutely dangerous. And now they are back in Burma or Myanmar, and they are working especially in the eastern part of the country. I was able to speak to David last weekend, 2 days after the fatal earthquake. If you could tell us something about the organization you're working for, or your organization actually, and if you could tell us where you are right now.
My name is David Eubank. I'm with the Free Burma Rangers. We're a humanitarian relief organization here in Burma. I'm in northern Kareni State, Burma. That's the eastern part of Burma, not far from southern Shan State. And we're on a relief mission. And our job is to give help. That's primarily medical help, hope, reminding people they're not forgotten, and love, standing with people even if you don't have anything, and getting the news out. And so I'm grateful to be able to speak to you all, because you get the news out in different ways and in some better ways than we do. So thank you.
Burma, Myanmar has been hit by a terrible and devastating earthquake the recent days. How did you experience this catastrophe?
Well, I was in the jungle and with some of the displaced people and some of the leaders of the pro-democracy. I was actually just in southern Shan State. And the ground started shaking more than I've ever experienced it in Southeast Asia. The ground is shaking. The trees are moving. Stuff is falling. But just fruit and leaves. Nothing, no big deal. We're like, wow, that was a big earthquake. But it didn't affect almost anyone here because the Kareni population, for example, is 350,000 people. They're all displaced. They're not in their homes. They're not in buildings. They're hiding in the jungle because the Burma army is bombing the homes, shooting the villages. And so we don't have any casualties I know of. There may be some remote village somewhere where a landslide hit. I don't know, but we saw no casualties because the Burma army is already wiping the villages out. After the earthquake, I went to a town called Mobia, southern Shan State. It's called Mobia, below Pekon Lake. And it is devastated, worse than an earthquake, bombed. And the Burma army is still there every day shooting their mortar, every day dropping their drones to this day. and it was devastation. I thought, wow, we don't need an earthquake for that. So the people here have not been much affected by the earthquake. However, up northwest of us at Mandalay Division, Naypyidaw area, Sagaing Division, there's been a lot of devastation that we've seen from our friends sending us photos and video that show collapsed bridges and destroyed homes and thousands killed, we understand, but we're not really sure. So right now we're trying to work with the underground resistance quietly. How can we get help up there?
Okay, and I mean, you said that, I'm coming back to this issue later, but you said that the junta is still bombing and attacking despite the earthquake, right?
Yes, there were multiple jet fighter attacks after the earthquake, that afternoon and that evening and that night and the next morning. And then even just yesterday afternoon, there was mortars landing right over here. And then I just got a report from a team further south, the Burma Army sending drone bombers and bombing them by a drone. So the attacks have not stopped at all. Now, some of the airfields, I understand, have been damaged. But that's what I hear. But there's many airfields that are still functioning, jet fighters still flying, drone bombers still bombing, artillery still shooting. They have not stopped fighting.
Because I heard that the rebels announced a ceasefire, right? So they are not somehow attacking right now in the moment? Or do you have any information about this?
Yes, I'm not sure about all of them. But the National Unity Government, that was the elected government, that represents some of the pro-democracy forces and some of the People's Defense Forces, have announced a two-week truce to help people. But I'm not sure about other groups. I know this for sure. The Burma Army has not stopped fighting. They're using this opportunity to attack, to try to get more sympathy, try to get more money, not to help their people, to increase their ability to attack their own people.
So that means it's somehow dangerous for international organizations to rush in and to help the people there, right?
Well, you know, the people in Mandalay and Sagaing Division and parts of Naypyidaw, they actually need humanitarian assistance. They need international organizations to go in with earth-moving equipment to rescue the trapped, to pull out the dead, to take out wounded. They need advanced and emergency medical care. They need food and shelter and comfort. These are all things the Burma military is generally not providing. And there's humanitarian organizations around the world that are good at this. So we would like to see them go. But the problem is, so far, the Burma government is not allowing this yet. We're hoping that's going to change in the next 24 hours. But my appeal to the humanitarian organizations is, first, please come. Get in there. You're needed. But don't be handing out money to the government. Hand it out to the people on the ground. Hand it out to groups of doctors and villagers and community workers that are there in every single place. There's people already there. Give them the money. They will use it the best. If you give the military the money, we have this past experience, they're going to use it for whatever they want to do. And number one is stay in power.
And but this means that the international organizations don't have access to the, let's say, rebel-controlled areas or also to the regime-controlled areas. Because, I mean, as you say, the regime wants to stay in power. That means that they need help for their people or in the areas they are controlling, right? So, but the internationals don't even have access to these areas as well, or is it somehow different?
You know, I'm not sure about the regime area. The last I heard, at least my friends that are trying to get in have not been able to get in yet. Now maybe, you know, someone has gotten in. I don't know. If they did, great. But I know there's some big organizations, then multi-million-dollar organizations that can bring in airplanes, they can bring in heavy equipment. They have not yet been allowed in. And maybe that's changing as we speak. I don't know. But the government so far hasn't let large-scale help come in the hands of the international NGOs. Now, when we speak about the resistance areas, the pro-democracy areas, there are many ways to come in. If an international organization is serious about getting to Karenni State or Karenni State to help, very simple. But once the organization gets in, their security will be provided for. They'll be able to do good work directly. And of course, there'll be a danger, though, because the Burma Army could bomb them, just like they bomb everybody else. The Burma Army could shoot at them. The Burma Army could blame them. But if international NGOs are willing to take the risk alongside the people in need, the resistance groups, the pro-democracy groups can get them in easily. That is not a problem. The problem is most international organizations don't want to do that. Okay, that's fine. You know, we're grateful for any help we can. Well, then you got to go through the government to get to the affected areas. And we hope that happens.
Okay. And as I understand, there are a lot of people still under the rubbles. Nobody really knows the number of casualties. Urgent help is necessary right now, right?
Yes. I understand the latest numbers are close to 2,000 dead and thousands more trapped. And some of my friends say it's over 10,000 dead. We really don't know. But that is my understanding right now. You want to see the vehicle we just got?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, you guys, I'm doing an interview. This is our vehicle. Check it out.
Wow, nice.
Isn't that cool?
That's cool. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Here's cool. The cool people in it. Sorry, I'm in the middle of an interview. Hey, Angzia, tell them who you are. Hey, tell them who you are and what's going on with the earthquake real quick.
Hello, Angzia.
I'm Angzia from Fiorgia. Right now, because of earthquake, like more than 102,000 people killed on the Burma, Mandalay is a kind of area. Also, we just hear a lot of the health, like humanitarian help sent from the international, but it's not go directly to the people. All of the status captured by the Burma army.
did you get that?
Yeah.
I love it.
At least they're still laughing, right?
Yeah, he laughed at everything. If you shot him in the leg, he would say, ha, 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 you shot me in the leg.
Okay.
Actually, his home, that was Angzia. His home is in Mandalay and was totally destroyed in the earthquake. He can't go home because the dictators will kill him. But now the whole home collapsed.
And I mean, the earthquake is one catastrophe, as you said, devastating and stuff. But the top of an iceberg, I would say, when we're talking about the situation in Myanmar and Burma in general. So can you give us an update about this situation? We are Myanmar is facing a civil war since 2021, at least. So how's the situation for the people?
Yes, thanks for asking about that. So Burma is the longest running war in the world, over 74 years. Since 1949, the succession of Burma dictators have oppressed the people. And generally, it's been the ethnic minorities that have suffered the most and fought back. But in 2021, when the dictators took even more power, the Burman people rose up. Now, there had been student uprising in 1988. But that was students. This was across the whole population of Burma. Most people tired of the dictators and stood up. College students, housewives, computer programmers, engineers, professional boxers, soccer players, Miss Myanmar, beauty, everybody stood up. And I think this really shocked the dictators. They did not expect this. And people came out in peaceful protest in 2021, and the Burma army gunned them down. And when that happened, many of the people fled to the jungle. And these are Burman young people, and they joined the ethnic resistance groups. Some as ethnic affiliated people defense forces, some as national unity government affiliated people defense forces, some as their own independent people defense forces. But that infusion of Burman volunteers building up military against the regime of Burma really frightened the regime. I think for the first time in history, they thought they could lose their country because the Burmans had joined the ethnics. Even though the ethnic groups, the Burman group, the PDF group, there's no significant outside military support at all. You will not find good weapons here. The only good weapons are the very old ones from Vietnam War. New weapons, they're copies, they're replicas. They're not even good quality. People are scraping together money and fundraising to buy one rifle, one pistol, or capturing from the Burma army. So they're not powerful military forces, but they have heart. They care. And they were defending against Burma army with muskets, ball and cap and powder, single shot break open shotguns that you would use to hunt with. And they still have many of those in the battles. Now they have some more captured weapons. But altogether, because of their heart, this is a major threat to the Burma military. So the Burma military is now coming with a speed and a violence of force we haven't seen. In the Free Burma Rangers, we've had this name for about 28 years, but we've been working for almost 32 years in Burma. And we've never seen this pile on. And part of it is the desperation and anger of the dictators and their army. Also, part of it is heavy support by China and Russia. Chinese Corps Quorum 8 and 9 fighters, Chinese, massive quantities of Chinese drones, hit by Chinese drones almost every single day. Big bombs, small bombs, little bombs, suicide drones, scout drones dropping incendiary, burning weapon systems. That's Chinese. And jet fighters, artillery pieces, heavy mortars, Russian Yak-130 fighters, MiG-29 fighters, Su-30 fighters, Russian Hind attack helicopters, North Korean rocket systems and artillery. And then we have Chinese Y-12 transport that drop bombs. So we have this international support from China, Russia, some from North Korea, that is pouring into Burma to keep them up and kill the people. We have never seen the casualty rates like we see them now. You know, for example, we're a relief organization. We're not a militia. We're not pacifists. We can defend ourselves. But most of our Rangers aren't even armed because they can't get them. But then our job is not fighting. Our job is helping people. But, you know, we have engaged sometimes when they attack us and we can't run. But even then, we're humanitarian. We're trying to avoid the fight. We have lost 30 people killed in the first 25 years or 26 years of FDR. We lost 30 killed. The last 4 years, we've lost 38 killed. So more than half in this short period of time. That's representative. There's thousands of people have been killed. And that at a rate we've never seen before. So with international support from Russia, China, North Korea, and others, the Burma Army is just hammering its people. Systematic destruction of hospitals. For example, every single hospital in Kareni State has been destroyed. Everyone. Every clinic destroyed. And the four hospitals that were rebuilt in the jungle in their hiding places, three of those destroyed again in their hiding places. We've had many medic teams wiped out. Churches. Almost every church I've seen here has been destroyed or is hit by rocket fire, by airstrikes, by mortars. Monasteries, most monasteries have been hit. Schools, most schools. So you can, before the coup of 2021, these kind of actions happened, but they were more episodic. They were random. Now it's very systematic to kill people and break them. So right now, in spite of all that, the pro-democracy resistance groups and ethnic groups control about two-thirds of the country. The two-thirds of the country you can move in. You could come right now. Now,
yeah, but these are the rural areas, right?
The rural, exactly. One-third is controlled by Burma military, and 99% of all the major cities are controlled by Burma military. So Burma military still controls the biggest cities in Burma, Rangoon, Mandalay, Naypyidaw, others. But they don't control a lot of the countryside. So we're in a situation now where I believe by my eyes and what I see, the Burma army is slowly losing. But it's at a terrible cost to the people. I was just at a funeral for a young 19-year-old who was killed by Burma Army. And hundreds of people have lost their legs, civilians as well as the resistance fighters. Landmines everywhere. When you look at a Burma Army camp, if the resistance takes over a camp, you see bags and bags, maybe 500 landmines in the camp. They've already put maybe 500 out in the fields. So they have 500 more to put out. And when they go to a village, after they steal, they burn the village. After that, they put landmines here and there. So when the villager comes back, boom, they lose their leg. And this is at a rate that, you know, has happened before, as you know, but it's all increased. So it's a very much a fight to the death, it looks like to me.
Why do you think is the world turning a blind eye, the Western world, let's say, a blind eye to the situation in Myanmar and Burma? We see a lot of engagement, let's say, in Ukraine. We see a lot of discussions in Gaza about the situation in Gaza and so on. But nobody's really talking about Myanmar, Burma. Why?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm glad you're talking about it. You care. I think one reason is, you know, it's far away from most of America and Europe. Second reason is they look different than us. We don't, it doesn't look like our group, right? Third reason is it's generally been an internal conflict. And so it's hard for people to understand an internal conflict, and they don't understand who's right, who's wrong. Will it ever change? It seems confusing. Another reason is where Burma is situated right under China, people are afraid to get China angry. But our appeal is, in spite of all those things, you help the people of Burma because it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. You can't help everyone, but some of us can help people of Burma. We help them because we would want someone to help us when we're oppressed. You know, when Europe was under the Nazis, people came and helped them. when America is in trouble, people comes to help. When your house burns down in Germany or England, someone comes to help you. And this is just human to human helping. No one's better than someone else. Another reason is, I believe, spiritual. God made people a family. We need to take care of each other. Another reason is geopolitically and strategically, a democratic Burma, if we help them form a democracy, is much better for international security. To have a democratic Burma below China, they don't have to fight China, but they're no longer a tool of China. They're another voice back into China. They can be friendly, but they're not going to be part of that dictatorship block. They're not going to facilitate aggression in the region. Another reason, economics. You know, Burma was the leading exporter of rice in the world in the 50s, and now it imports. It's just killed itself economically. And a democratic Burma would be economically better for the people of Burma, the region, and the whole world. It's another trading partner. The environment, because people are chased out of their homes. They're in the jungle. They have to eat. They cut the trees down. They make a field. No more trees. No more animals. And all this pollution and heating and degradation, it doesn't stay inside Burma. It spreads throughout. It crosses borders. Another reason, again, humans and economic, is when you have people flee the country, now you have millions of refugees in other countries that bog down their systems. There's no dignity for the refugee. There's no work. And then other governments have to pay for them. So to me, these are a humanitarian, spiritual, geopolitical, economic, environmental reasons why we should help the people of Burma.
Is Aung San Suu Kyi is still playing a role in this civil war, or what is her role now? I mean, she was a very, very famous person.
Yes, Aung San Suu Kyi, Nobel Peace Prize winner, one of the leaders of the democracy movement in Burma, loved by many people in Burma, a symbol of democracy in Burma, now under arrest for the second time in her life and held captive without a voice. She still has a role. Her role is giving people hope that truth will prevail, democracy will prevail, that one day they can remember they did have a form of democracy, because between roughly 2015 and 2021, there was growing democracy, and Aung San Suu Kyi was one of its leaders. But by 2021, the dictators were tired of that. They were afraid they're losing control, and they just arrested her, arrested many other members of parliament, killed others, killed any opposition, and took back control, and took more control than they ever had. So she is alive and remains a symbol of hope for her country.
Okay.
And we pray that she'll be released.
Great. David, I thank you so much for this impact and this information. This was really interesting. And yeah, I hope that the world is now looking more intensively onto what's going on in Myanmar and Burma. All the best for your work. Really appreciate it. Highly appreciate what you are doing there, guys.
Yes, thanks for asking about that. You care.
Additionally, the recent earthquake in Myanmar has also affected Bangkok, where the death toll in Thailand has reached 17, with 77 people still missing. The collapse of a high-rise building in the city has left many injured and trapped, and the rescue efforts are ongoing. The effects of such disasters extend beyond borders, reminding us of the interconnectedness of our world. The stories we have heard today are just a small glimpse into the immense challenges people face in times of crisis. If you're wondering how you can help, consider supporting humanitarian organizations that provide aid in disaster-stricken areas. Donations to groups like the Red Cross, Doctors Without Borders, or local relief organizations can make a real difference. That is for the episode of In Crisis Mode. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister. He's also a journalist in one of the radio channels of the Funke Media Group. You can find our podcast wherever podcasts are available, like on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Follow us, write us. Our email address is in the show notes, or find me on Facebook at Jan Jess. Take care and all the best.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.